This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. It's March, so Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this year. There's just nothing like betting in March. Breakdowns of every region and every game. From conference tournaments to the Final Horn, we'll have the picks and the plays on every single game. Cinderella spotlights, upset alerts, and some of that value for the last team standing. It's tourney time, so hunker down and bet the board with us. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to eighth time. Let's get the work in, man. Let's go.
Great day, great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Monday to all of you. Nice to be with you. Appreciate you getting up with us. We are with you till 10 a.m. this morning. I am Sean Pendergast. He is Pope Zaza. Seth Payne, hello, my friend. How are you?
Let's whoop it, Sean. Got a lot of stuff going on.
BITW, baby.
Big Best doings.
Yep.
Rockets did the right thing, which was to snap a win streak so they don't put too much stress on themselves. The Cougs do what they do, which is make it to yet another Sweet
yeah.
16.
Yeah.
The Texans, they signed Trent Brown. All of those three
Spin
things
the wheel,
equally,
man.
Equally significant.
Spin the wheel. Well, and Cam, and we'll get into this in deeper detail at 7 o'clock, but Cam Smith is still a Houston Astro right now. He's not a Sugarland Space Cowboy or a Corpus Christi Hook at this point.
Yeah. So I was joking about the Trent Brown significance. Cam Smith, very, very significant.
Yeah.
And also notable, John Singleton not going to be on the roster. So I don't know, probably potentially closes the chapter. He'll be back at some point.
You think?
Yeah, he'll always be back. Yeah. He's going to be 57 years old at some point, and all of a sudden late in the season, John Singleton will be back as a DH.
His wife tweeted last night, and this is where the cowboy rides away. Is what she tweeted. That was all. ..
Really?
Dot.
Yeah. I wonder if he's just going to call it a career.
It would be a shame for him to completely waste the off-season workout regimen that he went through on just a subpar spring training and then calling it a day. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no kidding. Or maybe he's going to be a fitness influencer.
Okay.
Dude, I'll tell you what. You have him do a couple of videos, how I lost 40 pounds and gained muscle mass. Boom.
Beats a minor league baseball salary. And that's for real. It beats a minor league baseball salary.
100%.
Yeah.
That was the big thing this weekend. The one fit guy with his morning routine of splashing his face in ice water and then rubbing them with banana peels. That's that guy probably made $2 million
probably,
this weekend.
Probably.
John Singleton, same thing. Just become a fitness influencer. What if she was just randomly watching some Netflix series that dirty black bag or something, and that was she was just giving her comment about watching the last episode of this series.
It could be, except she's pretty, as spouses and significant others go, she's pretty vocal on there about the baseball stuff.
She knows what's going on.
Yeah. She's got the better chance of being some sort of influencer than he does, probably.
Yeah.
So where to start here? The two basketball teams, and if we're going to pick a basketball team here locally that has a winning streak snapped, better it be the Rockets than the Cougs, because the Cougs' winning streak getting snapped would end the season. We don't need that. They're in the Sweet 16.
That's how it works for the uninitiated.
Yeah, for those who don't know.
It's a single elimination tournament,
done.
Folks.
Yep.
No consolation round.
One and done. Six straight years in the Sweet 16. That's not easy, man. And I know he's had the better team probably in all those Sweet 16s than the teams he's playing. But to get through the first weekend of March Madness, six straight years in a row, the one event that is built around upsets, although this year it's been very, very light on upsets, a lot of chalk this year. But kudos to Kelvin Sampson, man. And they got dealt They got dealt probably the toughest 8-9 game of any of the one seeds. Like, Gonzaga's no joke.
Yeah, Gonzaga's underseeded.
Yeah.
That was, now they're not the Gonzaga of, you know, your normal, you know, normally once a year you tune in and you're like, oh yeah, Gonzaga, I know exactly where
they're
that
two,
is geographically.
Yeah.
Sure, yeah. But they're always there. Yeah, that, they're not quite a classic Gonzaga team, obviously, but that
good.
Was... Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm not gonna say the Cougs got hosed or anything because they did what they had to do.
They beat them.
With still a little bit of a surge there at the end, but
yep.
For the most part, by and large, under control the whole time.
I was happy with the surge at the end because I had Gonzaga +5, so I got a push. So
oh,
I was okay with that. I was okay with that. I wanted the Cougs to win, but I thought the Zags would cover. The Rockets are a different story. Now I don't want to get too upset because it is a 9-game winning streak that just ended. They've won a bunch of games in a row, but man, last night was a massive missed opportunity. You know, this is cool. Like, they're playing meaningful games here in late March. Like, that's a meaningful.
Yeah.
Denver is the team that's chasing you in the standings right now. You're the 2 seed. This 9-game winning streak has put them all alone in the 2 seed. And you had Denver at home last night. No Nikola Jokic, so they're missing their best player. And not only do you lose, but you lose in a way where it's like you jumped out to a 13-4 lead and you guys are walking off the court after the first time out kind of laughing and chuckling. It felt like maybe this is a game they're going to take care of business. And then Jamal Murray just went nuts and they had no answer for him. Their shooting stunk. They couldn't shoot all night. They got out-rebounded, which is a big deal. They're, you know, the Rockets typically a pretty good rebounding team, but
They got out-rebounded in the first 3 quarters,
yeah.
Which is the big thing. They got it back in the fourth quarter, but it just wasn't. And then they were missing their shots when they did get offensive rebounds.
Yeah.
So usually the rebounding alone is all I care about with this team, the offensive rebounding. They're a bad shooting team, but they were particularly bad in the first 3 quarters.
Yeah, they made a run in the fourth quarter at this game to make it 103-97. I mean, they were trailing by anywhere from 10 to 15 points for big chunks of the second half. They cut it to 103-97, and then they had 3 straight empty possessions, and they had great looks. They had 2 wide-open threes. They went 0-for-5 in this sequence of a few possessions. And then Jamal Murray makes a bucket. It's 105-97, and the Nuggets kind of steer the ship into the shore. But it was disappointing because the missed opportunity was, if they win that game, Seth, they're all alone in the 2 seed with a 3-game gap between them and the rest of that pack right there, which includes the Nuggets, with 10 games to go. And with a pretty favorable patch of schedule coming up for the next 5 games, their last 5 games of the year are very difficult. The next 5 games are not all that difficult. So you'd have been up 3 games with 10 to go and a chance to really kind of cement yourself as the 2 seed. Obviously, nobody's catching OKC, but you could have made it to where it's going to be hard for anybody to catch you at the 2 seed, which makes all those games that you blew earlier in the year completely irrelevant because you could win all of those. You were never catching OKC. So the best you were ever going to do was the 2 seed. So that's disappointing. So now it's a 1-game lead. Denver has the tiebreaker over you as well. That was big last night. So the Rockets are going to make us sweat this a little bit, apparently.
Sean, this is a team that's so far surpassed expectations, yet at the same time, consistency has been the thing that's held them back in a lot of ways. And I'd rather them being in a fight right now and like losing 1 game after a 9-game win streak. Sure, that's going to happen. You miss an opportunity without Jokic in there. But I saw a big Lakers account. I think it was on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought at first maybe it's a troll, but it was a big Lakers account that said the Rockets don't deserve to be the 2 seed. And I immediately got triggered. That thing which I've been trying hard not to do. I got triggered as hell because what part of basic mathematics do you not understand about the deserving to be a 2 seed or not?
Tell me more.
If the Rockets don't deserve to be a 2 seed, then what the hell do the Lakers deserve? So, they are exactly where they should be, given the way that they've played. If anything, they've underperformed in some respects, despite the fact of surpassing expectations. The fact that they were banged up, but also inconsistent in terms of effort and defensive tenacity and whatnot in January and February. I think they're exactly right where they should be. If the rest of the Western Conference will get their crap together, maybe you could say that. And that, you know what? They'd be in the 4 or 5 seed.
Here's where that makes no sense. Was there any follow-up to that, or were they just doing things to trigger people by saying they don't deserve to be the 2 seed?
I know he was arguing everything, but I got it. I ran away. I don't need that drama.
That's why I'm curious what the reasoning is, because the first thing I would say in response to that would be they've beaten a lot of good teams this year. Their record against good teams. Like, normally when you say that somebody that's higher up in the standings and maybe they feel like they should be is because they're lamb killers. They beat up on bad teams, but when they face a bully, they get punched in the face. Or maybe they are the bully and then some other team. Whoever you want to make the bully in this analogy, go ahead and do it. What I'm saying is that if you're not beating good teams, then I could maybe see that argument, but you're right. In the NBA, it's just math. Like, you are what your record says you are when it comes to your seeding and whatnot. But that's why I'm excited for the postseason. Is if this, especially if they have home court advantage in the first round, I think they've got a playoff series win in them and maybe a little bit more. We'll see. They're still not getting a lot of respect from the odds makers, but by seeding, they're one of the, you know, if you just go by seeding, they're one of the top 4 teams in the NBA, right? I mean, they're the 2 seed in the Western Conference, and yet on any odds board, they're down around 10th or 11th right now.
I'll tell you what, though, and that's where I'm just starting to feel like I've got my back against the wall in a lot of ways, in terms of just, I think the nerds in the NBA, or the people that would want to be the gatekeepers for the way basketball is played and whatnot, it's very easy for them to say, well, sure, they get a lot of rebounds and they're scrappy, but they can't shoot, they don't have this, they don't have that. You know what? Sometimes teams outscrap other teams all the way to deep in the playoffs. And now I hope they play with a huge, huge chip on their shoulder throughout the entire playoffs. Yes.
Dude, you had one of the same reactions I did last night when there's no Jokic in this game. And DeAndre Jordan is the starting center for the Denver Nuggets.
What the hell? How is he still in my life?
I don't know.
What the hell is going on here?
I'm trying to find what year it was.
He's 36 years old. Well, Emoji Gate would have been like 2016, I think.
I feel like
when he was flirting with the Rockets.
No, he was flirting with the Mavericks. Remember that? And Mark Cuban was
the Rockets were
like,
in the mix a little bit. Were they?
I don't remember.
He went dark and yeah,
he was being like sequestered, but he had committed to the Mavericks, but then the Clippers were like, you're not going anywhere. I got to go back and see when that was, cuz it feels like it was, I'm not even joking, it feels like it was before I got to 6'10". It feels like it was 2012 or 2013. Like, it was like way back in the day.
It was 2018. Yeah. Okay, now it's all over the place.
Yeah, it was longer ago than that, I think.
There's an article written in 2018 looking back on Emoji Gate, which was in 2015.
That was 2015. Okay. Okay. So
Center had agreed to sign with the Mavericks, but members of the Lob City version of the Lakers reportedly flew to Houston to change his mind. That's right. Well,
Clippers. Yeah, it was the Clippers, I think, he was with at the time, right? You said Lakers. Yeah.
Oh, I did? Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah. The Los Angeles Clippers.
Yeah.
But that was the Houston connection, was that DeAndre Jordan was at his mom's house in Houston or whatever, and they flew to Houston trying to track him down. And then there were people driving around the streets trying to catch sight of DeAndre Jordan.
Mark Cuban was reportedly driving around. Yeah, owner of the team was reportedly
driving. It
started
innocently enough with an airplane emoji from Chandler Parsons, who it turned out wasn't tweeting about going to Houston.
Yeah.
Then Clippers Blake Griffin and J.J. Redick jumped in with an airplane, a helicopter, and an automobile. Chris Paul tweeted out a banana boat sequence of emojis. Paul Pierce was going at it. There was everybody in was all in on DeAndre Jordan.
Dude, think about who, and for DeAndre Jordan. Like, I'm Michael Jordan, DeAndre Jordan. Like, all this hullabaloo was for DeAndre Jordan, who, to my knowledge, he's made one All-Star team. Yeah,
That's pretty good. I guessed 2016, and it was 2015.
That's pretty good.
I claimed victory on that one.
You were closer than I was. Yeah, you were closer than I was. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Monday. Hope you had a great weekend. Man, a lot of stuff we got to get to. We'll get to the Astros and what they do with this roster at the top of the hour. We've got a bunch of headlines to get to. Seth touched on it. The Texans did make a move, and Seth did a little work over the weekend on not the newest tackle, but probably the most pivotal tackle for the Texans. Does he feel better, worse, or about the same after digging in on Cam Robinson? That is coming up next.
Live.
Live from the Mo Karam Injury Lawyer Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Hi, Payne and Pendergast with you. We hit the NCAA tournament and the Rockets in the open. We'll get to the Astros and the decisions they've got to make at the top of the hour. This should be a really interesting couple of days if you're an Astros fan as they settle on a roster to head into the season with opening days on Thursday this week, man. Baseball is here. It's a good time to be alive, dude.
Yeah, well, and the right field. We'll talk about right field a lot and whether it's going to be Cam Smith. And, you know, Zach DiZenzo has kind of quietly been having a really good spring training. Yeah, I know, but like because of all the hubbub over Cam Smith, I feel like DiZenzo would have been the story because of the questions in right field.
Totally.
But Cam Robinson with the Texans is who he teased. And Cam Robinson, I went back and I just kind of spent some time watching him more than I had when he was initially signed. I am, like we've heard Clint say in the promo, I'm feeling better and better about the fact that, okay, all right, like the dust is settled and you have a viable starting caliber left tackle on this offensive line. And like many offensive lines in the league, where you can get a really good performance without having it replete with absolute studs all over the place. You just got to have viable starters. Robinson, in a lot of ways, is kind of a muted version of what Laremy Tunsil was, which I know doesn't excite a whole lot of people, but remember this.
I'm going to need more.
Yeah. He doesn't cost $20 million per year.
That's a good start. Right? Yep.
Yeah.
I like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. That's the big key is it's a 1 year up to $14 million contract. Very much a prove it deal. But he's a guy that in Jacksonville, I think in the minds of Jaguars fans, it's probably a lot how we are with Tytus Howard, where Tytus Howard is just fine as a tackle. The problem is it feels like he's never really lived up to his potential. Like, he's fine. You can have him as a starting right tackle on any offensive line in the league, and he's not going to be the problem. It's just that you feel like you're not quite getting everything out of him.
Mm-hmm.
I think Cam Robinson has probably been that same way in Jacksonville. He is very impressive at times in pass protection. He uses, just like Laremy Tunsil, uses his hands really well. He's got really long arms and he uses them. Like, he'll reach out and just jolt guys and stop them dead in their tracks. His weakness is, and where he's not as good of a pass protector as Laremy Tunsil is, guys can get into him with power a little bit and bulldoze him some. That's when Will Anderson played him last year, there were times where Will just got frozen in the Han Solo stuff. What is that?
Carbonite.
Yeah. Frozen in carbonite at times. But there was, because Cam Robinson just reached out and snatched him. There are other times where Will Anderson was able to get on an edge and kind of just get up underneath Cam Robinson's pads and get him on skates back into the quarterback. So, but very passable pass protector and with really good hands. The thing is that just like Laremy Tunsil, he's not much of a run blocker. And What I'm trying to be generous with right this moment is that I think a lot of times when Laremy Tunsil wasn't a good run blocker, it always felt like, I don't know if Laremy Tunsil just gives a single damn
right.
about
Does
run
he
blocking.
Care about
yeah.
it? Exactly. Yeah.
Because he did not use his athleticism and his natural strength as well as he could have as a run blocker. I think with Robinson, it's just that he lacks strength at times, both in pass protection, like when he's given up those bull rushes, but also in the run game. I just don't think he has the lower body strength or the core strength to really tie it all together. And you'll see guys like Will had a couple really nice plays where he stood him up and made a play.
Mm-hmm.
But he shows a willingness on combo blocks and double teams and things. Like, he keeps his legs churning and driving. He'll pivot his hips around to get in the right position to where at least he's not completely losing the down. It's just, he's going into his ninth year in his career.
Yeah.
I don't think that's necessarily something that's going to change. It's not like all of a sudden he's going to go through a second puberty and get stronger or anything like that. But for the price tag and the contract, I think it's a really good prove-it deal for him. And I don't worry about him the way I would worry about a lot of other guys that might start at left tackle.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, if he didn't have those flaws you're talking about, he's not available for 1 year, $12 million.
Right. You know, yeah, he'd be making $20 million a year somewhere.
He wouldn't be on the Texans, yeah.
Yeah, and he also, and he's had some nagging injuries and whatnot, mm-hmm. so.
Yeah. So overall, compared to how you felt the day the signing was announced,
Yeah.
Do you feel better after doing your film study on him? Do you feel better, worse, or about the same as
I feel
Cameron?
Better. I yeah. feel better. I yeah. feel, I think initially my thought was, all right, yeah, there's still going to be competition at hopefully every spot on the offensive line. Right now, unless a rookie comes in and really overperforms or something, I'm guessing on day one, Cam Robinson's going to be the starter. The big wild card would be, all right, what do they think of Blake Fisher? Yeah. Are they looking at him right now as a swing tackle, or do they want Titus Howard to start at left guard and maybe move Laken Tomlinson over to right? And he hasn't played right guard at all in his career. I don't think he's taken a single snap at right guard. I think the most likely scenario is Titus Howard at right tackle, Cam Robinson at left tackle, that probably Tomlinson at left guard, and you've got Blake Fisher still continuing to learn and progress and be the swing tackle.
Well, that's interesting. The Blake Fisher part of that, he's a second-round pick, and I mean, look, second-round picks aren't a lock to become Pro Bowlers or even starters or anything. First-round picks aren't a lock to become starters. But in on a team like this, where there's been so much, all of a sudden, so much churn at tackle. Yeah. You know, it was Laramie Tunsil etched in ink, Titus Howard in ink, and then you see what happens with Blake Fisher. You now have a scenario where Blake Fisher was actually starting at the end of the year last year for this team because the offensive line needed that shuffling to accommodate the interior of the offensive line. I wonder how that makes people feel about Blake Fisher as a draft pick if he hasn't been able to... If indeed week one is what you just laid out with Howard at right tackle and Robinson at left tackle, and Blake Fisher hasn't been able to crack that code.
Yeah, I think the whole thing about Blake Fisher was that it goes into that old dynamic that I always find entertaining, except when it's my own team, which is everybody acknowledges that a guy's a little bit of a project, but then as soon as you see that he's a project, you're irate that he's a project.
Yeah.
You know, like Blake Fisher, the common thought and thing said about him on draft night was, wow, this is a guy that you get in the second round. Maybe if he stayed at Notre Dame one more year, he would have been a first rounder.
Yeah.
But he just needs to fill out a little bit, learn how to play as a lankier guy, all that stuff. And I thought last year when he had opportunities to play, he very much showed the upside. But then he also showed the side of him that's a rookie, that needed more playing time, that maybe needs some physical maturation.
Yeah.
And with offensive linemen, more so than any other position, the physical maturation is a real thing. You see guys kind of transition from being overgrown adolescents to full-grown men.
Yeah.
It's kind of like in the first puberty. There's a first puberty, and then there's an O-line NFL puberty.
Right.
In your first puberty, think about the kids you know that were like, they had a huge growth spurt, and all of a sudden they're kind of like all over the place. They're like one of those inflatable, promotional guys out in front of a tire store.
Yeah.
They're or a car dealership. They got to learn how to use all that mass and all that length. And I think Blake Fisher's still a little bit in that stage. So if you say, well, okay, Blake Fisher doesn't start over two guys who are established NFL veteran offensive tackles, I don't worry about Blake Fisher at all. I think that's and especially when one of those tackles is on a one-year deal.
True.
That I think that gives the Texans, if they don't draft an offensive tackle, you know, time to kind of figure it out. Blake Fisher at some point will start when one of those guys almost inevitably gets injured.
Hurt, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm cool with that part of it.
Text message, Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. Didn't the Texans sign Trent Brown? They did. They did. Friday, yes.
Yeah, Trent Brown, this is why I'm not factoring Trent Brown into the equation. Trent Brown got a one-year, $2 million deal, $3 million deal. He's coming off a torn patellar tendon. He is got to be 30-something years old because he's been in the league.
In 2015. He was a seventh-round pick of the Niners in 2015.
So he's probably 31 or 32 years old. But he's 6'7", 6'8", 360 or 70 pounds. Has had some good, solid play in his career, but he's one of these guys. He's kind of like the offensive line version of Mercedes Lewis, the tight end. We'll have one really good year, and then the next year you're like, what's going on with this guy? And a lot of it's due to injuries, I think.
Yeah.
So the prognosis for a patellar tendon tear is a lot like it used to be for Achilles tendon tears. Mm-hmm. It's still really dicey, and especially for a guy who's in his 30s, I think they're very much looking at him as, hey, let's bring him in. They're probably planning on starting him on the PUP and just see what we get out of him. But I wouldn't factor him into any kind of opening day roster or opening day lineup, at least.
Remember when he was in 2019, he was one of the marquee free agents back then, because that was a big deal, because that was the offseason where the Texans were coming off of a season where they started Julion Davenport at left tackle for a big chunk of that year. You know, they had traded Dwayne Brown. And I remember Trent Brown's free agency like it was yesterday, because there were a lot of Texan fans clamoring for the Texans to sign Trent Brown. And he signed a huge deal with the Raiders, and actually was pretty good with the Raiders for a year or two. He made a Pro Bowl with the Raiders. He was he was a decent signing for them. But he was the bell of the ball about 5 or 6 years ago.
No, I think he's got experience with Kaley, with Popovich, and with Nick Caserio. So this is a classic aging veteran, probably under, you know, Popovich knows that younger guys can probably lean on him. Trent Brown will pick up the scheme, but he's a huge question mark because of his injury status right now.
Yeah,
he's probably good to have in the meeting rooms at the very least now.
Yeah, he feels like a body who's there for the off the field stuff. Maybe even more than the on-the-field stuff.
With potential upside.
Yes.
A little bit like a Cam Akers. He's like a much, much larger... He's like three Cam Akers.
He is. He ate Cam Akers.
Yeah, yeah. That's where I am, and I think that the goal of going into the draft without being overly desperate in any one position, I think that part of the process has been completed on the offensive and defensive line side of the ball. If you look at the defensive line, all right, you get Sheldon Rankins back in the building. You feel encouraged about Tim Settle and some of the things he did last year. They bring Mario Edwards back. On the offensive side of the ball, you've signed a couple of veteran guards that aren't huge headline signings. And you bring in Cam Robinson at left tackle. There's not as much of a glaring desperation to get a young guy in who himself would have been a coin flip whether he's any good or not either.
Yeah.
So the old saying is desperation is a horrible judge of talent because you start grasping and reaching. I think that right now it puts you in a better position to take closer to the best player available in the draft. Maybe it's best offensive lineman available at 25, and I think that it's hard to find a mock draft where you don't see at least a few really intriguing offensive linemen at pick 25.
Yeah, there's a lot of good ones there at 25. I think for me, I don't know, man. I feel like a weapon at wide receiver for this season, not for the long term. If you're drafting for the long term, they could use a lot of things. But for this season, I feel like that wide receiver, I'll call it wide receiver too, like the outside wide receiver opposite Nico Collins is a bigger need now than anything. The offensive line, they've put a bunch of guys in that room that I think you can find five that if well coached, which is a caveat you bring up repeatedly, appropriately so, if well coached, they can be an average offensive line, which is all I'm looking for this year, is be average. Just be better than what you were last year. If you're significantly better than what you were last year, you're an average offensive line.
Well, and they can be a better than average line just with the guys they have. Yep. If you look at various teams like the Bucs, one of our listeners brought up the Rams. I thought that was a good example last year. Really, the Ravens, too. Every year there's teams that overperform based on what you think of these guys moving into it, and a lot of it just comes down to the scheme and how well they're coached at the positional level and everything else. I have to admit one thing too, because I thought back on Friday's show, Sean.
Yeah.
I did it for an entire segment. In my mind, I swapped out the two new guards, Ed Ingram and Laken Tomlinson.
I can't wait to hear this. Okay.
So Ed Ingram comes via Minnesota.
Right.
Laken Tomlinson comes via Seattle, and before that, the Jets and the 49ers.
Yep.
Whenever I say Laken Tomlinson, I think the lakes of Minnesota, the land of a thousand lakes. And immediately in my mind, Laken Tomlinson is Ed Ingram. And so you really got to check me every time we start talking about the guards.
They're very different guys. Yeah, yeah.
I need to purify myself in the waters of Lake Minnetonka before I can get this thing right.
That's wild.
Remember that dirty trick that Prince played?
Remember?
Purple Rain?
Yeah,
he said first you have to purify yourselves in the lakes of Lake Minnetonka. Purify yourself in the waters of Lake Minnetonka.
I've only seen Purple Rain once. It was back when it was in theaters in 1984, but I've probably listened to that album no fewer than 1,000 times.
Well, let me remind you of this dirty little prank that Prince played.
Yeah.
He said something to this woman that he was wooing about how, you know, first you have to pass the initiation rites. One of the things is you have to purify yourself in the waters of Lake Minnetonka.
Yeah.
So at the time, this woman's standing at the edge of a lake.
Mm-hmm.
So she strips down and jumps in the lake.
Mm.
And she comes out, and he says, "That's not Lake Minnetonka."
Ah!
Yeah. Prince, messed up, bro.
You dirty
little
dog.
He did say, to his credit, yeah, to Prince's credit, before she went in, he said, wait. Yeah.
And then
but he knew what he was
doing. She jumped in anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember that. Was that Apollonia that jumped in? Was that who he was trying to?
Oh, I don't even know. I don't know. I watched the clip this morning. I only remember it because I watched the clip this morning.
Yeah. I started watching Stranger Things this weekend.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
You'll understand all these references to the Upside Down and everything.
Yes, to the Upside Down. Yeah, I'm 5 episodes in. So the Upside Down is a big deal right now. Yes. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'll tell you, since we're on this, you know what I watched on Netflix yesterday? Oh, dang it. It's, I'll tell you, it was really good. It was The Harder They Fall.
Ooh.
It's a Western.
Okay.
It's really good.
Is it a series?
No, it's a movie.
It's a movie. Okay.
Yeah. And it starts off feeling a little bit, at first I thought it was a Tarantino film. There's elements to it.
Yeah.
But then it's almost like a modernized spaghetti Western.
Okay.
It's really good. There's a twist. The Harder They Fall. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Put it on the list.
Very violent scenes. A couple times Brandy had to have me. When it gets super violent, I have to mute it and tell Brandy when it's over.
Oh, she doesn't like that,
I watch
that, huh?
On subtitles. Yeah.
Okay.
She has a hard time with extreme violence.
Yeah, I'm with her on that. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Let's get to headlines. We'll get to the Astros deep at the top of the hour. We'll dig into what Dana Brown and Joe Espada need to decide here. But we got a lot of headlines. Rockets, college basketball. We mentioned the Texans. Legend passes away over the weekend as well. We'll get to all that coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
All right, let's get into headlines. We'll get into the basketball in just a minute. We've not mentioned the Astros yet. We'll dig a little deeper on them at the top of the hour, but we should mention them here in the first hour. They are going to have their official roster, obviously, sometime in advance of the season opener on Thursday. But reports coming out over the weekend from the Astros themselves about certain guys that have been informed they're not going to make the Major League Ball Club. I would say probably the biggest one to get the news that he's not going to make it is John Singleton, because this might be the end of the line as an Astro, Seth, for John Singleton. And he's been a part of the team the last couple of years. If you just look at his stats, he's obviously not a great Major League Baseball player, but the depth and the chronology of his story of even getting back to the big leagues is a really cool one. By all accounts, a great guy. This is the part I feel bad about is he went and got himself into incredible shape to try to make a run at making this roster, and he looks great. We saw him, and he actually looks really good when you and I were down there. Defensively, he looked really quick. But it hasn't translated at the plate, which is why he would be on this team.
Yeah, and that's a dicey thing with a guy like Singleton is that, man, sometimes big guys who can hit with power are best when they're really big. And almost to throw out your body composition or your bench press or anything like that, sometimes that extra ballast just makes everything work right. That boiler just helps you swing around the bat a little bit better.
It's like that season when Dwayne Brown got shredded for some reason. Like, no, what are you doing? No, for your job, we don't need shredded, you know?
That's where we remember when, during training camp last year, Nick Cassera and I had a little miniature debate about Damian Pierce's body weight.
Yeah.
And he liked that I used the word ballast, because I do think there is just, you can take your body fat measurements and anything else about your performance and your GPS times and everything. Sometimes bulk just matters.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for Singleton, in his longevity's sake, man, he's on the right path.
Yeah.
He seems to have just really discovered working out and taking care of himself.
Yep.
And what did his wife tweet out?
This is where the cowboy rides away, ..
Yeah, so I wonder if he's just going to retire.
I think he
made a major league roster, which is way, way, way more than anybody would have thought 5 years ago. And, it spent the entire season on the major league roster last year. Yeah, maybe this is it for him.
He got a $10 million contract before he even set foot in the big leagues back in the day, because he signed one of those deals that made Bud Norris all mad. a five-year, $10 million deal. Singleton's like, oh, I can have $10 million right now? Sure. Yeah. Give it to me. Give it all to me.
I thought, yeah, I hope he slapped at least half of that in a trust fund that he couldn't touch and everything and just sitting there waiting for him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No doubt. I guess the other big thing, and we'll get into this a little bit more in about 10 or 12 minutes. Cam Smith. No news yet of him not being on the team so far. And
yeah.
It looks like it's... I tweeted this out yesterday. I'm curious how you feel. I feel like if he's made it this deep into the process, the chances of him making the team have got to be really, really good at this point.
They're really good. I think the conundrum you find yourself in is that DeZenzo has played really well as well. And they've been putting him in right field to get him some feel. Yeah. And one thing Espada is always adamant about is that, look, man, especially with the young guys, these guys got to play every day.
Yeah.
So I still feel like the maybe more logical and traditional decision would be if it came down between those two. All right, DeZenzo's had his minor league experience, yeah, et cetera, that we feel comfortable finding ways for him to play every day on the major league roster, because he still needs to play every day too.
Yes.
He's still a developmental guy, whereas Cam Smith can play every day in Double A. And so which is it, the upside of Cam Smith, or do you take DeZenzo, who's also showing incredible upside in spring training? I'd be surprised if at least one of those two guys isn't on the roster.
Yeah, I'm trying of scenarios that would put both of them on the roster would be Cam Smith playing third base, Paredes moving to second and putting DeZenzo in right field, or saw somebody tweet this out yesterday, DeZenzo in left field, yeah, Cam Smith in right field, and put Jose Altuve back at second base, because Jose Altuve has not been that great in left field anyways in spring training.
Are we sure we're ready to see Altuve try to make that position change, Sean?
Back to second base. Some people aren't. Some people aren't.
Thank you to the Astros for making this a topic.
Oh, yeah.
It's made spring training so much more engaging than it's probably ever been before.
Yeah, I'm terrified of how it's going to work out, but it has made spring training more engaging. Rockets lose last night to the Nuggets. Not a great loss. I mean, the 9-game winning streak comes to a close, so I have a hard time getting super angry about it. The missed opportunity, I think, is the big thing to me, Seth. No Nikola Jokic for the Nuggets last night. Jamal Murray went off. They had no answers for him. He was 16 of 28 from the field. Every time they needed a big bucket, he was able to go get it for them. If you win this game against a depleted Nuggets team at home last night, you're 3 games up for the 2 seed with 10 games to go.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's going to end up mattering in the postseason for the Rockets or not, but man, that would have been nice to have a bit of a stranglehold on the 2 seed heading into the home stretch.
It would have been nice, but it's not like I'm in a position where I feel like, hey, the second seed is their birthright and they need to do. They've had an awesome run of 9 consecutive wins.
Oh, yeah,
you
yeah.
miss an opportunity without Jokic in there to win last night, and yet I am all for keeping them honed as much as possible to a razor's edge by having actual competition and purpose and reason to fight for that 2 seed.
Yeah.
Because that's what this young, the young guys on this team mm-hmm. need. I'm not crying in my Cheerios or my Shibani Greek yogurt over that.
No. They're the smart kid who occasionally will go out on a Wednesday night before a test. You know, like I have a hard time getting mad. You have a GPA of 3.6. But, man, yeah, if you just stayed in that night, you'd have gotten a 92 on that test. You got a damn 62. What are we doing?
Yeah.
So they'll mature, and it's okay. So 10 games to go, and the Rockets still the 2 seed, but only a 1-game lead over the Denver Nuggets. The Cougs are on to the Sweet 16. They'll face Purdue this coming Friday. We had someone text in.
It's Indiana.
Are they? Yeah, right. Are they stupid, being disrespected because they're the 9 o'clock game on Friday night, the Cougs? Should we channel it that way?
Yeah. Could I interpret it any other way?
Yeah.
No. that shall not stand,
right.
Damn it.
Yeah. So Cougs on to the Sweet 16. The big complaint that I've seen about the tournament this weekend is that it's a little too chalky. It's all power. There's only 4 conferences represented in the Sweet 16, where normally there's like 6 or 7 at least. You know, there's at least a couple, if not Cinderellas, you at least get a Gonzaga from the West Coast Conference that slips through.
The biggest Cinderella story we've had so far is that Aura kid from McNeese State mm-hmm. who has an NIL deal. And now it turns out that he's following the head coach out of town.
Yeah, man.
So it's just now it's one more reason to be jaded. That guy that you put in worst take of the week last week for him being jaded about this Aura kid,
yeah,
the team manager,
right,
being a phenom and getting an NIL deal, that guy was way more right than we thought he was.
The algorithm is feeding me every take that guy. This is a random Twitter dude who wound up on my feed on Friday, who I highlighted during Take-A-Mania, worst takes of the week. And now he's showing, every single one of his Aura takes is showing up. Like, you know when you refresh your timeline and it pushes the things that it thinks you want the most to the top? With this Condon guy, he keeps getting pushed to the top for me. So Texans signed Trent Brown, tackle from most recently from the Cleveland Browns, but several years in New England with Nick Caserio and Nick Haley. Cole Popovich signs a 1-year deal, $3 million. Brandon Cooks to the New Orleans.
He's coming off of a torn patellar tendon, everybody.
Yeah,
so
he's depth.
Don't get too excited about him.
He's depth. And Brandon Cooks back to the Saints, where it all started for him. 2 years, $13 million over the weekend. George Foreman passes away over the weekend as well at age 76. We will get to that in Acknowledge Me. I think it's more appropriate to acknowledge George Foreman than just throw him into headlines. So we'll do that at 7:20 today. A true legend in and out of the ring passes away over the weekend, and a great Houstonian as well, George Foreman. All right, up next, Astros. Chandler Rome has scuttlebutt. I like when Chandler does these articles with different bullet-pointed notes in it. Framber Valdez, what's he been hearing from the team this offseason? Who has Jose Altuve been getting tips from on how to play left field? This is pretty good. And we got a whole lot more to get to with the Astros. Does Cam Smith end up making this team is the big one. We'll get to that and a whole lot more.